Funding for Think comes from SMU Master and Doctor of Liberal Studies programs.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Americans are obsessed with football and with the men who play it very well. We see them not only as paragons of athletic achievement, but of a certain kind of masculinity. As we begin to acknowledge the hazards of the game for some who play it, we are faced with the uncomfortable truth that we are drawn to football, at least in part, because it is so brutal. Dallas Theatre Center's production of the new play Colossal looks at our national obsession through the lens of a young man named Mike, a star player for the Texas Longhorns left unable to walk after an accident on the field. As Mike confronts the reality of life in what is essentially a different body than before his spinal injury, he is portrayed by two actors. One, known as Young Mike, runs and tackles and dances across the field and glories in the body that makes him a hero. The other Mike, in life and on stage, travels in a motorized wheelchair and is left pondering the consequences of his choice to play the sport that left him paralyzed, and also the challenge of finding a way to be the person he really is in a culture that equates manliness with heterosexuality. Actor Zach Weinstein plays Mike, Alex Stoll plays Young Mike, Joel Farrell plays both Mike's father, Damon. Colossal is open at Dallas Theater Center through May 3rd. Welcome all of you to Think.
Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you.
I love this. Playwright Andrew Hinderaker, I hope I'm saying that right.
You are.
Was challenged by a mentor to write a play that was unproducible. What makes this look impossible on paper?
I guess I'll field that since I'm on staff at the theater. I think what makes it look impossible is starts with number of actors. At minimum, you know, it's a cast of nearly 20. And that may not sound like much, but when you're not doing a musical, you're doing a play, that's a huge cast. But on top of that, Andrew insists, understandably, and to our great joy, that the actor who plays Mike is actually someone who is disabled, wheelchair bound, which is how we came to have Zach with us, who's brilliant in the show. And then there's just the needs of the show sound like literally somebody is trying to play a bad joke. It's like we need real football players, brilliant modern dancers, a drum line, it just keeps going. But of course, the more he doubles down on the things that make it seem impossible, the more excited you get about producing the show. And we, our director of new play development, Kevin, our artistic director, and I all read the play. And within three pages, we all said, we got to do it. We've got to do it. Because you've seen the show, but you know, you're about 3 minutes in where you're like, this is not quite like any play that I've seen before. You know, both in what physically happens before anyone even speaks, and then the pace at which it moves. You know, I mean, it moves like a football game. So we're tired, but happy.
Yeah, as the audience is entering, we see the team warming up and running drills on the field. Joel, you're dancing and weaving through the action, and this is when people are just walking in,
right,
which kind of makes for an amazing experience when the audience walks in. We should say a little bit about what the set looks like, because for people who haven't seen photographs of this, it's really, I can't imagine it being done anywhere besides the Wiling.
Essentially, we have a quarter of a football field as the stage of the production, and there's a huge scoreboard in the back. The set design is really incredible. The sides are what would you call them? Like stadium lights.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's just truly like a visceral, immersive experience. You come in and you feel like you're in the middle of the game, mostly because you walk onto the stage and real drills are happening. You are in the middle of the game.
You walk on AstroTurf to get to your seats. And you're right. The Wiley Theater is unlike anything that I've ever seen in a theater. It's huge and completely convertible. And I also can't imagine this being anywhere else. The space itself is colossal. So I don't know if I could see it happening anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, talk about Andrew wrote a play. Like Joel said, the challenge was to write a play that was unproducible. And the resources that the Dallas Theater Center has, that the Wiley provides, give the play the scope and the massive space to hold all these big ideas and these big themes together. It's incredible to be a part of.
I should say that John Coyne is our scenic designer, and and Kevin worked long and hard. It seems simple in a way because you walk in and it's basically sort of a football field. It was an unbelievable process to decide how literal, how not literal, how abstract, all of that. And the larger the space, the more an intimate scene. And, of course, you've seen it. So there are explosive moments where 15 guys are running like mad. But then there are many, many two-character scenes. So you have the challenge of – so we – you know, the lighting designer, Jeff Kreuter, all of the designers just did phenomenal work to try to make sure that you could play both the highest level of intimacy and the most expansive athletic moments. And it's a blast. It's very freeing to be out there. It's a kick.
So Alex and Zach, you guys are playing the same character, or at least different aspects of the same character, before and after this accident. How much did you work together to develop a shared sense of who Mike is and how to be him? And there's a similarity to your voices. You look somewhat similar. I could imagine you as brothers, but you don't look exactly alike.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And yet, I definitely didn't have any problem imagining you as two sides of the same person.
Well, first of all, thank you very much.
Yeah, that's very good.
That's very kind of you.
We considered at one time doing big tattoos on our faces, but that didn't
Yeah, just kind of like
really
a similar
out.
Like Mike Tyson thing around our eyes, just to make that really clear.
It'll make it harder to work in the future, maybe.
Right.
Yeah.
That's ultimately why we dropped the idea. I would say that we really just approached it just in the rehearsal process. Because so everything that is done on stage, we're on stage at the same time pretty much the whole time. And I think that for me, I really just approached the role I was watching what Alex did, but I just approached the role as written. Because if you just follow the writing, that's a good thing about doing a play that's really well written. If you just follow the writing and do your work, the rest really takes care of itself. We weren't overly concerned with making sure that our voices were exactly the same or
right.
that we had the same facial expressions or mannerisms. There are a few moments where we marry the ideas.
But it was unsaid, I think. I think a lot of that was just we acknowledged it maybe in the beginning of the rehearsal process that we were like, okay, we have to be the same person. We have to figure out what our similarities are. But beyond that, we didn't really work at it. We worked at the text. We worked at the scenes. But we just sort of watched each other. And there are moments where I can see and feel Zach doing that even when we're performing. Like we have a sense that we are, you know, that we are each other. And I mean, he's a good actor. So he can take anytime. He does a good me. And I try to do a good him, so.
There's a lot left unsaid in the script, unexplained in the script. We don't, for instance, know there's this really interesting relationship that's explored between Mike and his father, Damon. That's your character, Joel. We don't know where mom is or if she exists or who she is. We don't know a lot about dad's personal life or anything that really happened before other than, this question of dance versus football.
Yeah.
I know some actors go through this exercise of like creating a backstory and some say, I just want to work with the text as it is. What choices did you all make?
Well, I'll start and then these guys will have more interesting things to say because they have, frankly, a larger role in scope. But I should say for anyone who doesn't know that the father, Damon, is written to be a rather renowned modern dance choreographer who has his own company. And without making any generalizations, you know, anyone insane enough to start their own modern company, you know, probably has a healthy ego and their life is rather focused on one issue, which is keeping that company afloat artistically and financially. And so that parallel between the sort of coach athlete relationship and the dance, the father whose son he sees reflected in himself because he's a star dancer. So the idea is that Mike has been part of Damon's dance company and probably in many ways his muse as well as his son and lead dancer. And so when he decides to deny his father, it's on a host of levels. You know, it's not only disagreeing with him about life, and it's not only saying I'm going to do something different, but it's actually saying, you know, this legacy that I am meant to be, I'm not going to be. But I have to say that Andrew who was with us through the whole process, the playwright, I think we probably thought at some point he was going to offer us some things about, like, where did mom go?
I asked those questions specifically. I was like, where's mom? And he was like, well, you know, that's something that you can kind of
determine
for
yourself. So I think we sort of, the three of us agreed that we would talk about it a tiny bit if it was helpful, mm-hmm. and then we would sort of leave it be. And what's interesting for me is that I know a lot of single parents, you know, for a host of reasons. But what ended up being sort of the significant point for us was that relationship that is not only father-son, but mentor-protege, artist legacy, all of that. And the more we worked on it, the more it was clear that we individually needed to think through we needed to have a story. Like, I have mine. I'm sure it differs from these guys. And that didn't bother the playwright, and it didn't bother the director, because they ultimately, you know, that was for us to do.
All right, let me jump in really quick. I have to take a quick break.
Sure.
My guests this hour are three cast members from Colossal, which runs at Dallas Theater Center through May 3rd. Zach Weinstein plays Mike, Alex Stoll plays young Mike, and Joel Farrell plays Damon. If you'd like to be part of our conversation, you can call 1-800-933-5372. Back in 2 minutes with the cast of Colossal.
Funding for Think comes from the new SMU Doctor of Liberal Studies program, a customizable evening doctoral program for Dallas community leaders and professionals. Now accepting applications for fall. More at smu.edu/DLS.
That is a bit of the drumline from Dallas Theater Center's new play, Colossal. We have three cast members with us, Joel Farrell, who plays Damon, Alex Stoll, who plays young Mike, and Zach Weinstein, who plays Mike. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 1-800-933-5372. I want to pick up our discussion about backstory, but just for a moment, people hear that drumline, they know there's dancing. This is not a musical.
It's not. No.
I've never seen the elements that the show brings together in one space towards one common goal before.
Without having a traditionally scored musical and composed musical, although there is original music by that drum line that you just heard that makes its way into the show. And it makes my stomach sink, because every time that drum line starts at the beginning of the show means I have to start running full speed. So hearing that just now gave me
it did, right?
Yeah,
but it's incredible, because that space is so big and the drum line fills that space.
Yeah.
Like,
mm-hmm.
If you don't get pumped up listening to a drum line, and that drum line specifically, like, there's a disconnect in your brain. It's phenomenal.
It is. It's an adrenaline shot.
So, Mike and Alex, what decisions did you make about backstory for your character or for the whole show?
I mean, there were decisions that I made about the mom, and specifically why she isn't there, and things leading up to the life that Mike has now in my situation. Like, it was mentioned, but I have a spinal cord injury. I use a motorized wheelchair in real life. Wow, in real life. That is so not my style. Like, a pun like that. But personally, if we're getting into, like, nitty gritty acting stuff, I usually just go with what's on the page, and if I need a backstory to really help me propel forward in the work, then I'll do that. And there were things that I made decisions for in this play. I think going into the specifics would almost ruin it for anyone who might decide to go, because I think that it's more the point is that the play, not in a sexist way at all, really just explores masculine relationships, relationships between fathers and sons and friends and lovers. And that's really where the focus is, and kind of dealing with that as a theme and how my performance and my investment in my role can best propel those themes forward is really where I put my energy in terms of thinking of backstory or character development.
Yeah, and so much of the play is written. It's so loaded. Each one of the scenes, I would say, has so much to do and so much to communicate, whether it's said or unsaid, that mm-hmm. that sometimes if we were to if we were to like cloud those moments with a backstory that we would have to force onto these scenes, I don't think it would be as helpful as it might be hurtful. But I wanted to say that a lot of what this play explores, along the same lines of masculine relationships and the way that men communicate with each other, there's a lot that is unsaid. And you mentioned that earlier, that there's a lot that, that you don't get to hear about Damon or some of the other characters in the play, or even about Mike or young Mike. But that, to me, is not only the beauty of this particular piece, but the beauty of a lot of art forms, is that the audience gets to fill in the gaps, and you get to decide or maybe ponder what happened before, or is that really important to what's happening in front of you. And that makes the piece that much richer, because you get to have an actual experience, connect with yourself to what you're seeing. So I think that was, I don't know. There was a lot left unsaid.
I think what you brought up about how there are things that the audience can decide for themselves. Like a lot of times, I'll watch a piece and I'll get frustrated because I just feel like there are questions that weren't answered that they needed to answer. And I think that what this piece does really well, again, like how good the writing is that the things that you decide for yourself, it doesn't feel as though these are things that are purposely left out or accidentally left out, that like the writer, the actors, or the production did a bad job of addressing. They're really things that, like, these are specific questions and specific ideas that this play points to, that we're saying, please think about this and come to your own decision.
One thing that struck me, it's clear there are multiple reasons why Mike chooses football over dance. It's made clear to us that he is equally talented in both. Mm-hmm. But
that's very kind of you.
honestly, I can't speak to the football, so maybe he's terrible at football. I know dancing.
Yeah.
It strikes me that, as someone who is coming to terms with a culture that equates, sports with masculinity, that being good at football means that Mike is accepted into male culture in a way that he might not be if he chose dance. And I thought that was very powerful, and I don't quite know what to do with that. But it's sort of true that no one's going to question your masculinity if they assume that you are involved in this very brutal sport.
Right. Again, we keep coming back to that theme of masculinity in it. And it is interesting being around people who play that sport for a living. We have a couple of people in the play who are football players who we met when we were training at a facility out in Carrollton, is that what it is? Where
Fourth and Inches.
And we met a couple of these guys, and we immersed ourselves in their world for 2 hours a day, 3 days a week, and we were in a lot of pain because of it. but it was fascinating to see how hyper masculine it is. I think that the idea of masculinity now in our culture is necessarily associated with what I would say is hyper masculinity. You have to be the loudest, the fastest, the strongest, the biggest, hit the hardest, and those are the kinds of things that we associate with being like manly. Whereas I think what this play does is shows another side to that, that you can be those things. You can act that way. And really, that's what it is. It's an act. And being a man or becoming a man is more about accepting what your circumstances are as an individual, and taking responsibility for yourself and living a life that is true to your own ideas.
I'm fascinated because these guys really got put through the ringer in terms of the training, which reminded me of anytime you're in sort of gladiator mode, any time in the modern world where arguably many of us do not face survival aspect.
Thank God, right?
But I was reminded a number of times during this what is always unnerving to me when we decide to go to war, which is that people who are 18, 21, 22, they have to gird themselves. I mean, there's a reason boot camp is about sort of breaking you down and making sure that you can handle the worst case scenario. Because to some degree, that is professional sports. As Travis, one of our football players, says, I mean, people want to see the fun, glorious slam bang on Saturday or Sunday afternoon. They don't really want to know about the painkillers and the injections.
The hours of training and the
missing your family.
You with your family.
And interestingly, I think that having grown up in the world of dance and theater, but dance from a young age, and these guys did too, there are amazing similarities. It's just that you don't slam into people. But in terms of the level at which you have to maintain your body, focus yourself, and injuries and pain, I mean, we've all been through 100 injuries and no one feels sorry for you. I mean, it's not like you get a free vacation because you sprain it. I mean, you do what you have to do to get back out there if you want to play at the highest level. So I do think there's some reality, whether you're talking about males or females, in when they go into survival mode, when they go into gladiator mode, when there is something at risk physically that they know they have to stay focused, that there is oddly something, I think, about us, about all animals, that sort of goes, rrr. You know, I mean, you either, when you face fear, you either cry or you growl, So I get the growling. I really do. And I think that because the play, going back to what's unspoken, I used to say in young adulthood that everything I kept, what I called an espionage as a kid, if I felt different, if I felt alienated, and I did not share that built up, and it always backfired. I mean, I always hit my sort of brick wall. And one of the things I love about Andrew's writing in this is that these are people who express themselves through their athleticism, through their unbelievable ability as dancers, but they do not verbalize a lot of what's going on. And the end result of that is not to say everybody should talk and share all the time. It's simply to say that whatever you live with is sort of your tough secret that doesn't get named. At some point, we'll probably leap up and smack you in the chops, and everything leaps up and smacks these people in the chops.
There are a number of scenes, one in particular, though, Zach, where your character of Mike is really taunted by Alex's character of Mike, who is sort of, preening in this body of his and saying, look at you. And that's like the voice of Mike post-accident sort of grappling with this. And I wonder, having been through a spinal cord injury yourself, like how real that writing felt to you and whether it reminded you of the period in which you were adjusting to the reality of your life in the body you have today.
Sure. Well, obviously, because I have an actual spinal cord injury and it's the same as what's in the play. And there are things actually that were in the play. He wrote this for another friend of his who has slightly different actual physical abilities than I do. And the great thing about having the playwright around is that he was there to augment the writing so that it could fit my physical reality. And it didn't change the overall theme or the overall message of the play itself at all. I view the young Mike, my interactions with young Mike, as being like haunted by the image of my former self and what could have been. And of course, I can relate to this in my own life. But in terms of the work that I'm doing, it's been 10 years since I had my accident, and really, I'm doing great. I'm doing okay. I've put together a wonderful life for myself. And in terms of the work itself, like this isn't therapy for me. This is work. This is a great job with a great play. I am an actor. This is what I do. And the experiences that I've had in my life just give me easy, immediate emotional accessibility to what I need to bring forward for this role. And I'm grateful for that. But I really look at it as a chance to put myself in a position where I can contribute to the art of exploring what it is to be human.
We're speaking this hour with three cast members from Dallas Theater Center's production Colossal. We have Zach Weinstein, Alex Stoll, and Joel Farrell. We'll come back to our conversation in a few minutes. You can join it by calling 1-800-933-5372. Thanks.
Funding for Think comes from the SMU Graduate Liberal Studies, offering evening programs for a Master of Liberal Studies and the new Doctor of Liberal Studies degree. You can design your own master's or doctoral degree at SMU this fall. More at smu.edu/GLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with three actors from the Dallas Theater Center's production of Colossal, Zach Weinstein, Alex Stoll, and Joel Farrell. If you would like to join the conversation, you can call in to 1-800-933-5372. Let's go on the line now to Trish in Fort Worth. Hi, Trish.
Hi, how are you, Chris?
Very well, thanks.
I just wanted to thank the creators and, well, everybody, but the creators for making the what seems like it would be an obvious choice to cast a disabled actor as a disabled character. I do some activism myself in regards to autism, and it's really great to see people doing that, and where there are so many actors out there that are being cast that are not disabled as disabled people. And I recently found out about a website called Don't Play Me, Pay Me.
That's awesome.
I've never heard of that. Yeah, I'm going to look that up.
And I think they have a Facebook page as well, but it was just when they said that during the interview, I just found that very exciting, and I think it's wonderful. So hopefully this will bring more attention to the fact that there are actors out there that have experience that they can bring to this stage, and to, you know, not take the quote obvious route, although it would seem obvious to cast an actor that actually faces those challenges to do it.
Yeah.
And to, you know, bring those opportunities to more actors that are trying to get on stage where they should be.
Thanks so much for that call. It does seem ridiculous in 2015 that people are not, that the directors and casting folks are not using people, you know, to portray individuals with disabilities who have disabilities.
Yeah. It's one of the problems that we face. I see it as one of the last, like, civil rights issues in terms of moving forward in the entertainment industry that we have left. You know, there are so many talented actors with disabilities who can do the job, do it well, do it with a sense of authenticity, but also do the right things for the part just as actors themselves. And it's really not that hard to find them. It just takes an awareness of putting that energy into making those decisions.
I want to say thank you, Trish, for bringing that up, because I wish we could completely take credit for it as the creative and administrative team of the Dallas Theater Center, but the playwright doesn't give you a choice. So part of what's fantastic is that Andrew, it came with the piece, which was great, because then there was no discussion. We just said about it. And like most things, if we had any nervousness just about taking it on well, you know, and being able to do for the actor who has unique disabilities or abilities, provide for them, this has been one of those experiences like, this is unbelievably great. Zach makes it easy, and I would have to say there are more casting director and agents and managers who are shrewder and smarter about how to make it work, you know, and joyously. So it's been great.
The other thing that this story really takes on is this idea we have in our culture. We were talking all about, you know, our definitions of masculinity, that somehow wrapped up in that is a really firm assumption about the person that you want to go to the movies with and cuddle up on the couch with, that people who are very masculine and manly and strong can't love another man.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Yes, I think that is. I think that is one of the assumptions wrapped up in our idea of masculinity as a culture. But this play explores Mike and young Mike falling in love with a teammate of his. Not to give too much away, but there it is.
Yeah.
And I think that the most of the conflict comes from that relationship comes in from them being in love in the context of football and that hyper-masculinized world. It's difficult for them to be able to express themselves to each other. And as far as Mike's character goes, I think that he probably feels a little bit more comfortable with himself. It's a given. He is who he is, and he feels okay with who he is. Chris Davis, who plays Marcus, who is the teammate who Mike falls in love with, his character is a little more complicated, maybe in dealing with that issue, because it doesn't line up with the world that he's trying to be in. He's trying to be a professional football player. And
it feels to him like there's too much at stake.
There is too much at stake. He even says, you know, this is my life. This is my life we're talking about. What happens if somebody finds out? I'll never play football. And
including down to sort of the what would seem like minutia but isn't, which is that he knows at best he'll be a fifth or sixth round draft pick, which means he's not a superstar. So his bargaining power is not equivalent, if that makes sense.
Right.
And that's fascinating to me. I mean, I've heard that from other pro players that are, you know, the higher you are up in the pecking order, the more you might be able to be open about certain things.
You know, I was thinking about this because it seems like I was getting all ready to pounce on sports, and it's, you know, easy to do from where I sit because I'm not a giant fan. I respect the work that goes into it. But even the entertainment industry, let's be honest here. Like, I was thinking about Neil Patrick Harris, who really didn't come out until he was well established in his career.
Yeah.
Well, frankly, he came out because he was about to be outed, and he wanted control of his own saga.
And the idea that somehow, you know, if he hadn't proven that he could play a character who was straight, he wouldn't want to let people know that he wasn't, because then he wouldn't get those roles. That feels ridiculous to me, but it still exists.
Yeah, I think it does.
Yeah. Especially in the theater world, to think that it's tough to come out in that one, you know, in the entertainment industry, because there's a lot of gay people in the entertainment industry. I mean,
there are a lot of gay people everywhere.
Well, yeah, that's
I think the thing here is also celebritydom. So, as you said,
I think that's the main
issue.
But it's exactly,
I mean, we were in talkback one night, and I said, I mean, when Kennedy was elected, there was a huge firestorm over whether we were going to have a Catholic president. And then, I mean, to this day, there would be a huge, huge argument over whether we could have a president without a prescribed faith. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, we have over-defined Barack Obama's presidency in some ways, probably due to the fact that he's the first African-American president. Or maybe we haven't. I don't know. All that means is that the sins of the fathers, not to hammer that too hard, but since I play the father and I am not altogether great at the gig in the show, it just fascinates me, because I think the minute you put what are all difficult life decisions on a big – you put it in front of cameras, or you put it on a national playing field, or all of that, it becomes – unbelievably dear. And I have great, great sympathy for Marcus's character, because there's a moment in the play where, in a sense, he's asked to make the decision in front of hundreds of thousands of people. I mean, there's, you know, so it's not a private decision altogether. It suddenly becomes this, it's here now or never, and, you know, he makes a choice.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to watch, because making the decision within yourself becomes something you have to grapple with just based on societies and the main culture at large, their values and their judgments. And then, you know, but within the certain small subculture of the thing itself, like in the entertainment industry, in theater, in football, it's accepted to be gay and to be out, like everywhere that I went growing up in the circles that I ran in. And that I still run in. But then bringing it out, like you said, in celebrity culture and to the masses, we're still not quite there. The conversation is big. It's ongoing. There's a sense that that this is the next wall to come down, but it's not down all the way yet.
And it is interesting to see when somebody – like you mentioned Neil Patrick Harris coming out, and how that is – because he is a celebrity, that's a big deal. But why is it? And I think that's a question that we try to – that we broach in this play. Why is it such a big deal? Well, I mean, who you choose to go to bed with, why does that matter to the work that you're doing? Why does that matter to the role that you're playing in a movie? Is it just because of the necessary ideas about being a homosexual individual will stay attached to that person in the minds of the public while they're watching, you know, somebody play a hyper-masculine character in a movie or a character on a football – in a professional football team. I mean, it's interesting to think.
We have had great questions from some of the high school kids, and one of them for Alex and Marcus one night was, how does it feel to play gay, and are you actually gay? Which is like, and I immediately sort of went, slightly inappropriate second question, but I'll, you know, certainly the two guys can answer it. And so I love the fact that although in a weird way you want to be able to say, why is that? Why in the world would that be significant to you? And if you suspected that a gay actor were playing a straight man, would you give them points for that?
Right.
Or that a lesbian woman were playing a straight woman,
it's
would
so
you
brave,
give them points
right,
for that?
It's
so brave. And I speak from personal experience. No one's ever given me any credit for, you know, I've played many a love scene with a woman, and nobody's ever awarded me special points for being convincing. And there are times where I just want to go, hey, some turnabout is fair play. You know, if you get rewarded for that, somebody, you know, throw me some cash. You know?
The last thing I want to bring up that was interesting to me and that I was thinking about and have been thinking about. Hassan El Amin is terrific as coach, and he stalks about the field, and he's completely believable.
You have no idea.
You have no idea.
Backstage, he's completely believable as coach. Yeah.
But I was wondering, because he does play this almost surrogate father role as coach as well.
Yeah.
He's tough, and yet he clearly cares about his players. He clearly knows them pretty well. I left wondering, does he know? Does he know about this love affair? Does he know about these two young men that he is charged with knowing so well and pushing to their limits?
I'm glad that you left wondering, because that's kind of the idea.
Is
that it provokes those thoughts.
And I think that we probably, including the creative team and the playwright, have specific ideas about whether or not he knows. But I think that is a question that we want to leave in the air, because why not? I mean – and again, when you ask those kinds of questions of yourself, then it leads to the next question. Why does this matter? Why am I asking myself this question? Why does it matter if he knows or not? And is it specifically the context of him caring about the individuals, or is it because it is a gay thing that he needs to be aware of and he needs to try and negotiate for himself and his relationship with Mike or Marcus going forward? Why does it matter? That's what we want to leave in the air, I think.
Unanswered questions are my favorite thing about doing the show, so I'm glad to leave it there. Colossal runs at Dallas Theater Center through May 3rd. Zach Weinstein plays Mike. Alex Stoll plays young Mike. Joel Farrell plays Damon. Gentlemen, it's been a pleasure to have you all here. Thank you so much.
Thanks,
thank
Chris.
You.
Pledge.
Pledge.
Thank you for
pledge.
That.
Money
thank you
helps.
For that.